From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, what do our harbor masters think of derelict boats? Yes, there's red coral in Alaska, and there's a new mayor in town. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
State agencies, harbor masters, and communities around the state want stronger laws on abandoned and derelict vessels. The Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators submitted proposed legislation to Governor Bill Walker's office last month that would make it easier to find vessel owners and hold them accountable. KSTK's Aaron Bolton has more.
The Harbor Masters Association has been working with government agencies as well as native and environmental organizations to develop the proposal. In a nutshell, it would require titles on all boats that are currently required to register with the state. It would also create a derelict vessel tracking program and make it a misdemeanor offense to abandon a boat.
We need to make some changes to the law so that it empowers the state agencies and the local governments and even private landowners to protect themselves from derelict vessels.
That's Brian Hawkins, Homer's Harbor Master and Vice President of the Harbor Masters Association. Hawkins says the state can't ignore the problem. Several derelict vessels show up on shores, sloughs, and in other waterways around the state each year. These boats are expensive to clean up and pose safety and environmental hazards. Hawkins says the problem is growing. He noted that Bethel has about 40 barges in Steamboat Slough.
These are 200-foot-plus vessels that have been basically dumped there.
Statewide, the issue is harder to get a handle on. No one knows just how many ships are lying around. The legislation would create a Department of Natural Resources-run derelict vessel program that would track at-risk and abandoned boats. Anyone who sees a derelict vessel or denies an at-risk boat harbor access would be able to report them.
Now, these reporting forms would be done online, and the report is sent in, and then the database is generated, and pretty soon we end up with, you know, points on the map that give us real numbers for how big the current situation is.
The program would be state-funded. Current boat registration would go up $6 in 2017 and continue increasing every 3 years to help fund the program. Hawkins says the proposed legislation also clears up the process to dispose or sell an impounded vessel. Some of those proceeds would go to the program after covering impoundment costs. Hawkins says derelict vessels have become an issue for two primary reasons. It's hard to track down owners, and even if you do, it's hard to hold them accountable.
Because what we find when we have a derelict vessel is oftentimes is that just there's this broken paper trail for ownership. And then you get into large vessels, they're registered through Coast Guard. And so documentation is, you know, the process there. We find the same thing.
All motorized boats are required to be registered with the state. Hawkins says some owners don't register vessels, and enforcement can be an issue in such a large state. Derelict boat owners may also remove registration numbers, including an imprinted hull ID number. That's a number all boat manufacturers are required to brand into the hull of boats and is required to register a vessel in Alaska. A title program would be implemented under the proposed legislation to tighten up the registration process. Hawkins says the push for a title system would create a better paper trail. If the legislation is passed as is, owners of derelict boats could be convicted of a misdemeanor.
Class B misdemeanor to abandon a vessel on state or private or city property. And there was a maximum 90-day sentence and a $5,000 to $10,000 fine.
Petersburg Harbor Master Glory Ann Wollen says the penalty would enable Southeast Harbors to have one more thing to hold over boat owners. She says most boat ownership in Petersburg's harbor is local, making it easier to find boat owners. But when boats are left, it can be costly.
You know, we just got done demolishing a 40-foot boat that was left and abandoned in our harbor and sank, and so I had to have it hauled out, and there it sat for 4 or 5 years waiting for the owner to come back and retrieve it and settle up, and he never did. And then he just kind of dropped off the map.
Woolen says the price tag to take care of the vessel was around $5,000. She was happy the boat was small enough to take care of.
So if you start having a 100-footer, then all of a sudden, you know, we don't have the facilities here to deal with that. So then you have to end up taking it down south or to a place that does have the facilities, and that is a huge expense.
The legislation would also require boats over 35 feet to have insurance. An unclearly outlined initiative included would be a fund dedicated to cleaning up derelict boats and taking vessels that owners can't afford to dispose of. Hawkins says tightening up laws and getting a grasp on the current issue is only part of the problem.
You know, you can't just say, well, that's a derelict vessel and it can't go here. Where can it go? In the end, a lot of these vessels are going to have to be disposed. I don't have all the answers. Nobody does. It's going to be expensive, but we have to be thinking about that and work towards solving that part of the problem as well.
The association also submitted a resolution asking the state to fully fund the Harbor Matching Grant Program. It ranks harbor projects around the state and pays for half of projects it's able to fund. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online anytime at kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
You might not expect coral to thrive in southeast Alaska, but it does exist in the silty waters of glacial fjords. Now scientists are wondering if the coral, which serves as important fish habitat, could be in danger from an invisible threat, ocean acidification. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Inside a lab at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Juno headquarters, Bob Stone is showing me a red tree coral plucked from the bottom of Tracy Arm Fjord. This one is dried, the color of ramen noodles.
If you kind of feel it, it feels like popcorn.
But in the wild, he says it's an intense red, like the color of salmon roe. Stone is a fisheries research biologist at NOAA. And until fairly recently, he didn't know that coral could exist here.
Well, until 2003, nobody did. Or if they did, they weren't telling.
Around 2004, someone did tell. Stone was giving a seminar, and a person from the audience came up to him. They said they had seen this type of coral in a glacial fjord in southeast Alaska.
And I said, no, you didn't. And they showed me the specimen, and it was indeed that.
The next year, NOAA received the funding to go see for themselves. Stone had his doubts because red tree coral typically lives far below the ocean surface, in places like the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea, at depths of more than 2,000 feet. Glacial fjords, on the other hand, can be shallow, but its unique landscape replicates the environment of deeper water, so the coral can thrive. For Stone and the other scientists, that was a huge surprise.
First time I saw one, I was amazed. I didn't know what I was looking at. They're almost more of an orange color, but they're just a huge reddish-orange tree underwater. They're, to me, one of the more beautiful animals I've ever seen.
It also serves a very important function. Stone says scientists call the thickets of red tree coral little forts because they're hideouts for small species, like fish and crab. But around the same time scientists were discovering just how versatile this coral could be, they were also becoming increasingly concerned about changes in the ocean.
By the early 2000s, you know, we had sort of come to recognize that the ocean actually was increasing carbon dioxide level, that ocean acidification was happening.
That's Tom Hurst. He studies the effects of climate change on marine life at a NOAA lab in Oregon, and his primary focus is commercial fisheries in Alaska. He says, in part, the reason our oceans are becoming more acidic has to do with us.
Primarily from the burning of fossil fuels. So you're taking all this carbon that was stored underground in the form of coal and oil, and as we burn it, we're releasing all of that.
And that becomes carbon dioxide, which gets absorbed into the water. Now you've got a cocktail for ocean acidification. Still, Hurst says a big piece of the puzzle that's missing for scientists is what that can mean for marine life.
We don't really yet have a good handle on which of those things are going to be affected, how much they're going to be affected, and then how those effects are going to translate and sort of ripple through the rest of the food web.
Already in Washington state, ocean acidification has been linked to oysters not being able to fully develop their shells. As far as we know, that hasn't happened in Alaska yet. But scientists have named places like Southeast Alaska and the Aleutian Chain as potentially threatened spots. Hearst says what's next is figuring out how, not if, ocean acidification will impact different forms of sea life.
I think I have one over here.
Back at the NOAA lab in Juneau, Bob Stone is showing me a baby pollock suspended in a bottle. Typically, the coral helps shield the baby fish from predators.
This one here, I actually collected in the coral by hand.
Discovering the red tree coral in the glacial fjords has an added bonus. It makes it easier for scientists to retrieve, since it's shallow water. Now Stone is conducting an experiment to see how much ocean acidification could hurt the coral down the line. It has an easily dissolvable skeleton, and scientists are wondering if the added chemicals in the water could make it harder for the coral to reproduce. But ocean acidification may not be the only threat. The glacial fjords that are home to this surprise coral are also changing. So I guess when we talk about disappearing glaciers, that also affects the coral.
Well, yeah, now we now realize that say, for example, in Tracy Arm, if the two main glaciers that are there go up into the alpine, you know, up into the valleys rather, that system will shut off.
When the glaciers disappear, the shallow water coral will too. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
For the first time in a dozen years, the nation's top fishing port has a new mayor. Frank Kelty defeated incumbent Mayor Shirley Marquardt in the Unalaska City runoff election by just 5 votes. City officials made the announcement last Friday morning after canvassing about 90 absentee and questioned ballots. Marquardt nearly won the close race in the regular election last month. She fell short of a majority by just 3 votes, and the contest came down to a runoff. Ultimately, Kelty earned just over 50% of the vote to retake the mayor's office, which he previously held back in the 90s.
Well, I'm very pleased, and I want to thank the community for all the support I got on this long election process. This will probably be my last 3 years as an elected official, and I look forward to doing the best job I can on behalf of the community.
During his campaign, Kelty promised to pursue alternative energy in the city, pave more of the community's roads, and install a fish-counting weir to monitor the island's salmon runs. Still, in such a tight race, Kelty says it's possible that Marquardt will ask for a recount.
I'm only ahead by 5 votes, so I can't speak for her what she's going to do.
The incumbent has 10 days to file for a recount, according to City Clerk Kat Hazen. Hazen also says the runoff brought more than 600 Unalaskans to the poll, or about 32% of registered voters.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KSTK's Aaron Bolton in Wrangell, Elizabeth Jenkins from the Alaska Energy Desk in Sitka, and KUCB's Laura Craigle in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett, reminding you that it's fall fundraising time for many of the public radio stations that carry the Alaska Fisheries Report, and I'm pretty sure they would all appreciate your support.